Mindful Coach Podcast. So welcome to this edition of the Mindful Coach Podcast. And with me today is an exceptional person who's got some amazing background, has a great story to tell, and some deep insights that just lit me up whenever I listened to her TEDx talk. So I invited her to talk. And who am I talking about? I'm talking about Pamela Dangelmeyer, a highly skilled mindfulness practitioner, facilitator, and life coach. She has a graduate certificate in mindfulness-based teaching and learning, where she graduated with distinction. And Pamela's exceptional performance, she also earned her the award as the outstanding achievement in that program. Seeking to enhance her ability to assist her clients, she completed the renowned Wayfinder Life Coaching Program with Martha Beck, becoming a certified life coach with an ACTP accreditation. Showcasing her commitment to her profession, Pamela is a founding member of our very own Mindful Coach Association and a professional member of the American Mindfulness Research Association. And she shares that most valuable lesson she has learned is the power of intentional silence. And I just want to stop right there because that's what your presentation was about in the TEDx talk, and I just found it so on point. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes so people can just jump right to it and maybe listen to that before they hear you talk about that. How did you land on silence as such a powerful, this is going to sound weird, such a powerful amplifier of our lives and our effectiveness?
Well, thank you, Brett. And that, you know, it's true. Silence as an amplifier of what we as mindful people are all about. You know, it reminds me of a story. It goes back to last September when I was first accepted as a speaker at TEDx Surrey. And I was talking to my dad, who at the time, my dad has since passed away, but at that time I mentioned to him, I said, "Hey Dad, I got accepted to speak at TEDx Surrey." And he said, "Oh, that's fabulous. What are you going to be talking about?" And I said, "Silence." And then there was this pause and he said, "Well, that's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it?"
Yeah,
and I said, "You're right. It is. It is." And yet, you know, Brett, that it took me a while to land on that. What is it that I wanted to talk about? I really took an inward journey, as it were, to come up with how I wanted to share my experience in being a mindful person, coaching in a mindful way, teaching mindfulness. How could I really narrow in on that one thing that has really supported me and my clients and those who take my courses? What is that one thing? And then one day it just came to me in my silence. It's the silence, the intentional silence. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. So how did you come to, I mean, these kinds of questions are always a culmination of things that happen to the insights. Mm-hmm. And so you had this insight that silence is really the way you, the focus that you want to have. Mm-hmm. How do you help your clients turn towards that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's a scary thing, silence, isn't it? It's a thing that it's a thing that we as a society are very uncomfortable with. In fact, in my TEDx talk, I use
so
that line.
True.
I say our culture nowadays has silenced silence. We filled our days constantly with distractions, if you want to say it that way, whether we do it intentionally or not. We live in a noisy, crazy, busy world. And because of that, silence is something that most people really are not comfortable with, because it's a habitual thing to fill our awakened moments with sound, with noise, with whatever it might be. And so when I'm working with clients, I do my best to sort of, I hate to say it, surreptitiously work silence into our discussions. I leave space for silence. I let them know that when we're working together, this is a safe, supportive environment that I don't expect from them. When I ask them a deep question, I don't expect from them an immediate answer. I give them the permission, I guess, to say it's okay to just sit and be with that question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To take the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I find that is so valuable. I just love that you're saying that because I do have a similar orientation, and I have so many experiences with clients when I'll ask them a question, and really what I'm hoping for in my coaching framework is for them to just hang out with the question and see how it resolves, rather than try to explain, oh, that does this and that does that. And I'm a firm believer that just asking that question and facilitating, making it okay for them to just pay attention to how that resonates,
yes,
is a fabulous gift to people.
Yeah. I think what you said really there helps. Was the most important is that it's okay. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's what it really comes down to is it's all right to be quiet and to be reflective and to think before we speak. You know, that is mindful communication, listening intently and with intention to what the other person is saying, and then allowing yourself also to be with the words that you're about to express and let them percolate, mm-hmm. let them come to the surface. But our society is so counterintuitive in that way. We don't allow that. We're expected to have an answer, you know, right away. You know, it's that game show mentality. It's like, okay, I got to answer. I got to push that buzzer, you know, before the next person does, before I got to get the answer out there. So,
right. Excuse me. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, so allowing for that space is not something people are used to. And yet, when they are allowed to experience that, oh my gosh, you know, amazing things can happen for them and for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah. So rich. And I like it that we're on the interactional, interrelational part, the social part of silence, because there's an inward and then there's an inner communication, but there's a communication aspect. Mm-hmm. How do you think that developing this capacity to, let me just ask the question, how do you develop the capacity to kind of have this more inner space so that you can connect in a more profound way with others?
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe in practice. It's practice. Mm-hmm. It's practicing enough that it becomes a habit so that it becomes a trait. You know, it just becomes who you are. And the first step in that is just to know that it's okay to take a pause. It's okay to really listen intently to what someone is saying. It's okay to be silent. That's the very, you know, the very first step. It's okay to be self-aware, to allow yourself the permission to be accepting.
Yeah.
That's one of the tenets of mindfulness is acceptance. To simply be with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I used to teach this course, Mindfulness and Presence and Communications, and one of the exercises we had was I'd take people in a room that never met each other, and then for just 3 minutes, I would just have them sit across from someone and not say anything. Uh-huh. And people were pushed to the limits of their tolerance with that. I mean, I got all kinds of feedback about how intense that was. And I would just, and it is an intense experience just to sit across from somebody you don't really know and not say anything. And it was so, I don't know. I always felt like it was a very educational experience for people to, because I would say, well, you know, all we're doing is sitting down across from somebody. There's nothing really happening here. But yet there's all this activity.
Exactly. There's nothing really happening here verbally, like, or with sound, but there's a lot of stuff going on. There's lots of stuff. And that's the richness that I encourage people to tap into, because people often will mistake silence with a void. They think nothing's happening. What's going on? It's like this vacuum. But we all know that when you do actually sit with it, it's not a vacuum at all. Oh my gosh, it's full of all sorts of wonderful, scary, interesting, exciting, you know, the gamut of all the adjectives that you can, you know, put towards that are present. We just need to tap into it.
And now I noticed in your TEDx talk that you didn't use the word mindfulness at all in it. So what was that, an intentional design, or what was your thinking around that?
It was absolutely with intention. And, you know, that's, again, it's a bit of a, you know, counterintuitive for a mindful coach or someone who is a mindfulness practitioner. Why wouldn't you mention the word mindfulness? I mean, it seems like the obvious thing to do. And I did it with intention. And the reason was, is because I wanted to reach as wide an audience as I could with my message of the art of deep listening, if you want to call it that. And I honestly felt that if I brought in the word mindfulness, and I've experienced this myself, if you mention the word mindfulness to some people, not to all, you get this kind of glazed over, oh, there's that mindfulness again. It's right, like a catchword. Right. It's a phrase that some people don't truly understand. And when they hear it, they immediately almost a bit of a wall goes up, like, oh, here we go with mindfulness again. Oh, we're going to hear that again.
Yeah. And that's preconceived notions. Yeah.
Preconceived notions. Absolutely. And so I wanted to let that just be, you know, they want to read my bio. They can see that, you know, I am a mindfulness facilitator and practitioner. But I wanted it to be, as I said, too, it, going back to your first question today, why did I choose silence? And I felt that silence was the basis, the underpinning for that deep discovery of what it means to be a mindful person. And so I just exited that word to the side and let it rest and brought the focus more to the silence.
Mm. So how did you get on this path of like just going inward and discovering, you know, what's inside and how that helps you connect outside? And then something in you somehow lit up to go, I'm going to help other people do this as well. Yeah. So tell us about that journey.
Well, you know, it's a long journey of self-discovery. I've been, you know, discovering myself, I guess you could say, for so many years. And there were poignant points in my life where I really was, if you want to say, I was stressed out. I was burnt out. Sure. I was working at a job, for example, I mentioned that in my TEDx talk as well. In the 1990s, I was living in Germany. I was working at a job that caused me an inordinate amount of stress. I was very unhappy. It was playing out on my health. And insofar as it even, you know, got to the point where I suffered from hyperacusis. So I was hearing everything really, really loud.
Which is, oh, I see. So that's like hearing everything loudly.
Absolutely. So it's like someone turns up the volume on everything, including the sound of my own voice. So I couldn't even stand listening to myself. It would ring so loudly in my ears. And I thought, yeah, it's a very, luckily it didn't last very long.
Yeah, but, thankfully, yes.
But, excuse me, it was at that point in particular that I thought, I have to do something. You know, there must be something I can do. I don't want to turn to pharmaceuticals or anything like that. It wasn't the way I'd lived my life up to that point. I thought, there's got to be something I can do. And that's when I really started down my mindful path. I started to really look into ways that I could be autonomous in my self-healing. And that's when I came across, you know, doing more meditations, reading more books based in Buddhism. And that path started to really open for me. And as I went through my further along my path in life, I began to integrate it more and more into my way of living, of how I was. And then I discovered the calling. I thought, gosh, if this works for me, it absolutely can work for other people. And I know that there are other people out there practicing mindfulness and being mindful and really benefiting from it. But how can I then bring this to people? And to my great fortune, I discovered this program at the University of the Fraser Valley of mindfulness-based teaching and learning. And I thought, that's the ticket. That's the way for me to really understand not only the practice of mindfulness, but also the scientific studies behind mindfulness that may help convince a naysayer, if you want, about the actual, you know, solid benefits that can come from it. And so that's where I ended up doing that. And I graduated from that. And then I began my own mindfulness-based coaching business. And so I, you know, have been helping people ever since. It's such a rewarding thing to do.
And so what happened to your work situation, relationship to all this?
My work situation is I left that job. I realized that there was really, in the expanse of that job, there was no opportunity to change the situation. It, would continue to go forward as it was. As it turned out, I moved back to Canada shortly thereafter and started working in a different area, and so was able to benefit from it. I mean, I don't regret being in that situation. It taught me a lot. It certainly steered me onto the path where I needed to go. And that's often the case, isn't it? You know, these challenging points in our lives really steer us in the direction that we need to go.
And so since that, since you left that job, what did you decide to do with this? You know, how did you put this into motion, your vision to actually help people, you learn to be more mindful?
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I left that job and I moved back to Canada, I started a business with my partner, and we began an e-commerce based plant business, which is, you know, has a lot to do also with being mindful. Has a lot to do with being outside and enjoying nature and listening to all of that. So we really wanted to start a business that could help people to do that. And we, you know, I've been doing that ever since. I mean, it's a company that sends plant material to, you know, across Canada to every province and territory, and based in just outside of Vancouver, BC, and been doing that now for over 20 years. And so that my experience with mindfulness has helped me in that business as well, because that is a seasonal business that goes up and down and up and down in terms of when you're busy and when you're slower. And it's a pace that you have to get used to, and all sorts of, you know, interesting situations within the growth of that business. And at the same time, also developing my coaching business and my mindfulness teaching business on the side, which is now becoming more.
Yeah, that's I'm happy to hear that. So you've got this entrepreneurial background, as well as the mindfulness training, and so are there any? This is maybe an unexpected question. Are there any situations in your business world where you feel like that your mindfulness experience kind of unlocked opportunities that you may not have otherwise had? Does some situation or some negotiation or some scenario, because I'm always interested in those moments where, because you've done some kind of work, something different becomes possible.
Yeah. Well, I think mindfulness has also helped me to, you know, excuse the phrase, it's an overused phrase sometimes, but go with the flow, you know, go with the flow of what's happening. I've been in business negotiations where been put on the spot, as it were. You know, I remember distinctly setting up a meeting with one of the major newspapers here in Vancouver, where they were potentially considering having us cooperate with their garden writer, their editor, to bring some products to the market, simply put. And showing up to that meeting thinking that there's going to be one, two people there walking into this, you know, into this room, and pretty much every editorial editor from that newspaper was there, production staff, and so on. There was about 30 people in that meeting, and I was not expecting that at all. And so I had come with my, you know, with our notes and our ideas, but really having to go with the flow. And part of that, of course, was my mindful training at that point in time, just accepting the situation as it was, knowing that it was not what I expected. Okay, well, let's just go with it. Let's go with the flow. And that's what I did. And I have to say, too, part of my theater training as well, because I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in theater arts, and I used to play theater sports quite a bit. And so improvisation is also part of my makeup. And so when someone says to me, let's do this, instead of saying no, I say yes, yes, and?
Right, that's one of the key principles of improvisation, saying yes.
Exactly, exactly. So all of these things come into play. You know, life is very rich. Life is quite juicy. And I think when we, when we reflect, when we take time and be silent and really listen to our inner selves, we actually hear, Brett, I think what we need most to hear, and that is our own inner wisdom. And that inner wisdom will guide us the way we need to go every time.
That's so beautiful. So what do you say, though, to people who say, well, you know, when I sit down and I look inside, it's just it's a chaotic mess, and I don't really even like that. I don't even want to go there. Yeah. What do you have to say to people who have an experience like that?
Mm-hmm. I say, try again. You know, do it again. Because every day, even for myself, and I'm sure that you've experienced this yourself and so have your listeners, when we sit down and we intentionally set the intention to be mindful, to be quiet, to be meditative, in whatever way, shape, or form that finds itself, every time is different. You know, sometimes you sit down and think, this is just awesome. I'm having a great meditation. I'm discovering all sorts of wonderful things. And the next time you sit down, it's excruciatingly challenging to settle your mind because we're so busy. And I say to clients, that's how it is. That's how it's going to be. And if that's the case, then we really need to go back to the basics of mindfulness. You know, focusing on our breath, for instance, a great anchor. It's the best anchor because it's in the here and now. It's not in the future. We don't breathe in the future. Well, hopefully we do. You know what I mean. But we're not breathing in the future. We're not breathing in the past. It's in the moment. Something that we can physically, tangibly feel and notice and exercise that mindful muscle. And eventually, the next time you sit down, maybe you'll have a more insightful, a reflective moment in time. But it takes practice.
So persist.
Persist.
One of the spiritual schools I was a member of, they were big on the I Ching, and they would say the most frequent phrase in the I Ching is perseverance furthers.
Yeah.
And so it's like, persist.
Persist.
That's really, I really love this. And so you also, as I understand, have a relationship to gardening as well. I'm just kind of trying to fill out the map a little bit about, you know, who you are as a person, as a character on the planet, you know, because you're a very interesting person with a lot of talents. Because so far we have acting, we have entrepreneurship, we have mindfulness, meditation, improv, and then you mentioned improvisation, and also you have a relationship to gardening as well. Yes. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, gardening, you know, in the sense of, I mean, that is one of the business that I run, one of the businesses that I cooperate in. And I find gardening to be a wonderful pursuit. And I know that having spoken to so many garden clubs over the years and talked with so many gardeners through our business, that gardening is one of those, if you want to call it hobbies or lifestyles, that affords people the opportunity as well to be very mindful. When they're out in the garden, so many times people say to me, I can't wait for spring to come. I can't wait to go out and go into the garden and get my hands dirty and watch all of those things that I planted maybe in the fall, those beautiful narcissi and the crocus now coming up and watching them grow and tend to them and to be in the garden where it's quiet and, you know, commune with Mother Nature and to simply be an experience. And it's a wonderful mindful practice. And through the business, you know, working at Botanis, that's the name of the company, I've become an expert of sorts in all different types of plant material that I had never even really experienced before. But being the person who is often responsible for creating the catalogs that we distribute and also working on the website, creating all descriptions and so on, I become really innately familiar with different types of plants. And that in itself is a huge, wonderful experience to know all these different wonderful plants that are available to us to grow and to nurture and to love. Yeah.
So amazing. And so I hear what you're saying exactly in terms of connecting to, you know, there's a lot of, in what you just said about the natural rhythms of things, plus the somatic experience of simply being in touch with nature, your hands in the dirt, the groundedness, and kind of away from the static of the world into a rhythm that is literally organic, you know.
Yeah.
I believe that there's a way that our bodies normalize, our nervous systems normalize in those moments that are, that help us turn into those, towards that more, those more still and silent places. And from there, hopefully, you know, deeper connections can emerge.
Yeah. As I often say to my, you know, clients or, you know, family and friends, when you feel the world is pressing down on your shoulders and you're feeling squashed, you know, feeling just so small or so, you know, incapable of moving forward, one of the things I suggest to them is if you're able to go outside, just go outside. Yeah. All of a sudden, when you go outside, even if it's just stepping out onto your back porch or wherever you might be, all of a sudden, the feeling for me personally is that it's like a lifting. It's like an expansiveness. It's like take a deep breath in and you can really feel it, as you say, somatically within your body. It's like a release. It's like an opening. And it's one of the quickest ways. I mean, we've heard of you know, nature bathing, forest bathing. You know, there's a spiritual aspect to that, but there's also an actual chemical. I mean, plants release in the forest, they release things called phytokines, which are a kind of a balm for our souls, but also physically when we breathe those in.
What could you say that
they're
word
called
again?
Phytokines or phytocines. Okay. Depends. Mm-hmm. Latin is pronounced in different ways by different people, but it's a chemical that allows for a release, an opening. It's how the forest protects itself. It's like it's like you're getting your own, you know, protective armor, as it were, against those things that might be negative in your life. And that's why people are sometimes naturally drawn to forests. They go and walk in forests and they just feel better. They don't know why.
Definitely.
Yeah, they just feel better. Yeah, exactly. So I often recommend that, you know, to people. Just go outside. Go for a walk. If you can, find some place in nature to go for a walk or just sit and take it in.
And so would that be one of the things you might ask a client to do? Like, as people come to you, often they're not very skilled with these learning how to down-regulate their system so that they can connect to these deeper places. What kinds of things do you ask them to engage that's, you know, to facilitate that kind of learning for them?
Yeah. I think one of the first things that I let clients know too, because there's often that misinformation that if we're going to be mindful, it means we have to sit for 40 minutes a day and meditate every single day.
Precisely.
Without pause. Yeah? And I say, sweep that to the side. Let that thought go, because, you know, you may get to that point. That'd be great. But really, truthfully, when we are mindful, we have opportunities every day to be mindful. So when someone is saying, well, how can I do this? I say, well, the next time you're cooking your spaghetti sauce over the stove, set the intention to be mindful in that moment. Take in a deep breath. What does it smell like? Does it smell good? Are you enjoying that? Listen to the bubbling, you know, the popping, the bubbling sound of the sauce. Stir slowly and with intention. Enjoy that moment. Take in as much as you can about the smell and what you're hearing, all of your senses. That is being mindful. And in that moment, you are experiencing your life in that present moment, and it's wonderful. And so I suggest to clients to do that whenever they can. Those are mindful meditative moments. Mindful walking your dog. Mindful sitting on a park bench, mindful driving. How many times have we driven someplace, got there and said, I don't remember how I got here. How did I get here? You know, those kinds of things. And that's what I suggest to people who are new to mindfulness and new to, you know, exploring their inner world, is to take it in small moments in time, because we don't have to be the person sitting on the beach in Bali with in the lotus position, which quite frankly, most people can't do anyways. But just, you know, and you can do that wherever and whenever you want. The key is intention, to set the intention and say, at this moment, the next bite of my meal, the next sip of my coffee or tea, I'm going to do it bringing all of my senses and all of my attention to that moment in time.
Well, I so resonate with everything you just said. And particularly the statement that the key is intention. Because mm-hmm. It's one thing when you step outside and you see a beautiful sunset and just flood your senses. It's another thing to say, I'm going to hang out here for a couple of minutes, and just notice this.
Yeah, on purpose. It's on purpose.
On purpose, in the moment.
So. Yeah. It's all of those things that mindfulness is, but it's just sort of broken down into sort of maybe less cerebral thinking about mindfulness and more heart-centered, more this is something that anybody can do, really. Anybody can do it. You can do it. Anybody can do it. It's just setting that intention. Yeah.
Exactly. I love that so much because it's about inviting mindfulness into your everyday flow of life, you know, mm-hmm. rather than having it be something you sit down and must do. You know, this is my mindfulness, like an exercise. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually a good thing to do. But I'm a firm believer in exactly the process you're talking about.
And
if I think that people, it makes it a lot more accessible. And that's really key, I think, these days.
Right. And that's, you know, and that goes back to my TEDx talk about that accessibility and why I didn't mention the word mindfulness. And I just wanted it to be about silence because, you know, there's sometimes that misconception that the utilization of silence is reserved for people of religious belief or who are spiritual practitioners or, I don't know, librarians. You know, it's silence is for everyone and it's accessible wherever you set the intention to make it accessible.
That's amazing. And so how did you get the itch to do a TEDx talk? How'd that come to you?
Well, I've been a fan of TED and TEDx for many years. You know, it's such a wealth of knowledge and experience from people all over the world. And so I've, you know, listened to many TED talks and many TEDx talks. The local TEDx that is in my area, TEDx Surrey, is one of the preeminent ones in Canada. It's mm-hmm. a well-visited, well-supported, very professionally run organization. And I've been going to that TEDx either in person or during COVID. It was online.
I see.
And so I attended those as well and just was really inspired this last year. So that would have been in 2023. Went to the live event. And that's really when I thought, gosh, I'd love to do this. I would love to be able to get up on stage and speak to people about the benefits of mindfulness. But it took me a while, as you said, to really hone it in and figure out exactly how did I want to get that message across.
Mm. Beautiful. Well, you did very well with it. I really, really enjoyed the presentation. And so great the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Very happy to, you know, have this conversation with you and to explore, you know, your journey and your path. And in particular, you know, we're like kindred spirits in a way in terms of the mindful communication focus and the, I call them micro mindfulness practices, the real somatic ones. And I just really love it that you're doing that work. So thank you.
On behalf of the world, Brent.
Thank you.
thank you for the opportunity.
For doing this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I am going to put into the show notes all the ways people can connect to you, as well as the, you know, the link to your TEDx talk. And so can you say a little bit about the coaching that you're doing and you know, who you want to work with?
Mm-hmm. Well, and thank you for that opportunity, you know, to speak to that, because as a coach, you know, the word life coach is again, just like mindfulness, people kind of glaze over sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think, oh, life coach, what does that mean? Oh. My intention is to help people who are feeling stuck, you know, feeling stuck, because I was stuck at one point in my life, as I mentioned back in the 90s, I was really stuck. I didn't really know where to turn. And if at that time I had honestly someone who I could, you know, other than family and friends and so on, that I could really talk to in a safe, supportive environment about what was keeping me stuck, would have been hugely beneficial to me. And now looking back on that, I think, well, I can potentially be that person for others. I love to help people move forward in their lives by seeing what it is that's potentially holding them back. And of course, what I bring that's unique, well, not necessarily unique because I know you do it as well, but certainly special.
No, I think you're doing it in your own unique way. I do.
is to bring that you know, measure of mindfulness to my coaching and to encourage that mindful development within my clients. Because, gosh, I honestly think a mindless life, you know, if it's not mindful, it's a mind that is full. And I think mm-hmm. that when mm-hmm. people can understand the tenets of mindfulness and begin to practice it, then they really can tap into their own inner wisdom. And my job as a coach is to help them tap into that by allowing them Beautiful. The opportunity to do it. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. And I invite people listening to reach out and connect and get unstuck in a way that helps you become more mindful and connected to, you know, the depth of what silence can do for us in our lives.
Yeah.
Listen to the TEDx talk, and I really appreciate you being a guest on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Brett. And I want to, before we go, I want to leave
sure.
with just one last quote that always sticks out in my mind. And I think it's been so helpful for me. And I think it speaks to silence and it also speaks to mindfulness. And it's a quote by Viktor Frankl. And if people are not familiar with Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. He's a psychiatrist. He was the founder of Logotherapy. And he said that between stimulus and response is a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and freedom.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
So thanks once again, and we'll be in touch. And I really have enjoyed this conversation, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this edition of the Mindful Coach Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and if you did, follow us and leave us a review. If you're a coach or helping professional that values mindfulness in your work, browse over to mindfulcoachassociation.com and create a free community profile describing your services so the world can find you. And you'll be invited to exclusive community meetings where you can meet your colleague. I'm your host, Brett Hill, founder of the Mindful Coach Association, coach and coach trainer, teaching the Mindful Coach Method. You can find out more about me at themindfulcoach.com. Until next time, stay present.